It's time for Breaking Bread with Papa.
Hey!
Don't you know?
Hey!
It's our goal.
Hey!
It's time for Breaking Bread with Papa.
Hey!
Don't you know?
Hey!
It's also a show.
Hey!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Breaking Bread with Tom Papa. I am Tom Papa. Thank you so much for joining us at the table for another amazing episode. I'm very excited about this episode. You're going to be very excited as well. We've got Duncan Trussell and Lizzie Cooperman. More about them in a orders. Very excited for today's show. I love these two comedians so much. Duncan Trussell, a national treasure. He's just so positive and so inventive. And Lizzie Cooperman, the same. Just a unique, funny, bright spot in the world. And I'm very excited about this. This is going to be so much fun. And Lizzie has this amazing story. Duncan has this amazing interview. The quick bite is with Lizzie because I read an article about how in LA, we're having a peacock problem. We're having trouble with peacocks. They are running rampant through the streets, through parking lots, bothering people. And Lizzie had a peacock encounter over the pandemic. During the quarantine, there was, on her Instagram, she kept posting about this one peacock who she was interacting with. And when I say interacting, I thought she was just taking shots of the peacock, sometimes close, sometimes far away, around where she lives. I gave her a call on the quick bite today. Wait until you hear this story. This is an amazing story. It goes so much deeper than I thought. This was a real pandemic, soul-searching, nature battle, triumphant fight. I don't even know how to begin to explain it. You're going to just have to listen for the quick bite. That's with Lizzie Cooperman. It is an amazing story, and she's so funny when she tells it. And Duncan Trussell, you know Duncan Trussell from his Netflix show, The Midnight Gospel, which if you haven't seen it, he's been on our show a couple of times already. I just love him so much. He's just such a positive force. And The Midnight Gospel is such a great animated show on Netflix where he takes things from his podcast and interviews and they animate it. And it's always soul searching. It's always looking for the parts of reality that maybe don't present themselves all the time right in our face. He's an explorer. I would call him a spiritual explorer. And he's so damn funny. And we have a great interview with him. He's left LA. So I use the podcast as a way to touch base and spend time with him. And I always feel better for it. And you will too, for sure. And also is Duncan Trussell Family Hour. His podcast is amazing. And he's also on Rogan all the time. And he's just one of the best. So you're going to enjoy that as well. I want to share this with you real quick before we get started because it is an action-packed show and we have a lot to get to. This morning, when I say we, I mean me and my baker self. check this out if you can see it on the YouTube. Do you listen to it or do you watch it on the YouTube or you do both? Here is a little thing, reason for you to go to the YouTube. Look at that. Look at that beautiful blueberry scone that I baked for you today. Ooh, I had bought two containers of blueberries because I saw a recipe for blueberry muffins, Ritz-Carlton style, paraphrasing, from the New York Times, from their cooking app. And they look like these amazing blueberry muffins. And I was like, well, I should give those a shot. So when I was in the store, wasn't sure when I was going to get to it, but you have to buy a lot of blueberries and not cheap. I think they were like $8 a package. And I needed two of them, which actually was a little short from what that recipe was calling for. And I realized I was unprepared. It's one of those things where you're like, that sounds like a good idea. And then you realize, oh, I don't have unsalted butter. Oh, I don't have the little cups for the muffins. It just seemed like it was going to be a thing. And then what am I going to do with these blueberries? Well, more than muffins in my everyday life, I like the scone. I know our friend Kira Sultanovich and I got in a fight here on the podcast. She thinks that they're dry and terrible. I literally want to drive this to her house. It is so moist, so good, so easy. Scones are not a tough thing to pull off. Just flour, baking soda, baking powder, lemon zest, buttermilk, blueberries, of course, sugar, a little egg wash at the end. Just mix it all together dry. Mix in the buttermilk and the lemon. You put it out on the counter. You mush it into a big rectangle or circle. Take your knife and just chop it into triangles. And you get about 15 of them. Pop them in at 350 for 15 minutes until when you press it down, if it comes back up, you know you're in a good spot. And I'm sorry, Kira, in your face, they are so damn good. I would eat it right now on camera, but I know you guys get angry when I chew on the mic, so I'm not going to do it. But man, it is delicioso. You know what? Maybe just a little bite. No one's going to really matter. No one's going to... Sorry about the chewing, but holy Toledo. Nothing better than when you leave a plate of a new baked good out on the counter and you just watch it slowly disappear. I didn't even see anybody from the family eat it, but it just keeps going down throughout the day, and then people start taking halves, and people start taking quarters, and before the end of the day, this is all going to be gone. Oh my God, that was well done. Well done. I also had a big bread thing this week where my friends from Preston and Steve in Philadelphia, it was Steve's birthday, great DJs there in Philadelphia, and it was Steve's birthday, and he's been clamoring for bread, baked it, got it out, overnighted it, made it onto the show, delivered my friend some bread and some starter in a little glass mason jar. I don't think he'll ever bake bread, frankly, but it was a nice gesture. And got him bread, made him very happy. Haven't heard the review, haven't heard if they ate it yet, but it was, I don't mean to go right to this, but it's expensive to send bread. To send a little loaf of bread overnight, way too expensive. I would send it to all of you. I would send you all bread if I could just get the price down. I would happily send it to the listeners. Why not? Just spread it around. But right now, it is cost prohibitive. But for a special occasion like Steve's birthday, why not? So that's my baking antics for the week. Hey, let's get right into it. Let's go to Duncan Trussell. I called him. He is in the Carolinas and got to spend some great time with him. I really think you're going to enjoy the interview. And when we come back, we will go grab a quick bite with Lizzie Cooperman. And I'm telling you, you have to listen to this story. It is the craziest peacock story you'll hear this year. I know what you're thinking. How many peacock stories do you hear? If you do hear one, this one will be crazier. I guarantee you. All right, but right now, enjoy Breaking Bread with Duncan Trussell. All right, Duncan. Holy Toledo. This moment is the thing that gives me joy in doing this podcast, because there are certain people who, as we're running around in our busy lives, we don't get to connect other than a text here and there. And then, no, this podcast is making us sit down together. Yes. You're one of my favorite people. This is why we are doing Breaking Bread. Good to see you.
Good to see you. I think, you know, I feel the same way about you. And you're one of those people I just randomly think about. Wonder what Tom's doing. you just pop it in my head. It's cool.
All right. Well, let me start off with this first question, because I'm thinking about doing this as the first question for Breaking Bread all the time, and you're going to be my first one.
Okay.
What did you eat today?
Oh, wow.
What have you eaten so far?
Okay, that's a great question. I ate a bagel at Brugger's Bagels. Mm-hmm. And because I was in a hurry and I didn't do the process right. You know, there's a you're supposed to ask the person behind the glass to make the bagel that you want and not ask the cashier. I didn't know that. So I asked the cashier and she took the money and I sat down. I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And then I went up and said, "Hey, what's going on? I ordered a bagel." And they're like, "Did you only tell the cashier?" Somebody turned and looked at me from a booth like, "What's fucking wrong with you? Don't you know the system?"
That is the hardest part about going into the world right now, is that every single place has their own system and you have to learn it from the time you open that door. You have to know exactly what their protocol is, what their plans are.
Yeah.
And it almost makes you just want to stay at home and pop an Eggo in the toaster.
Oh God. Yes. Yeah. It just makes me feel embarrassed. Like I'd lost my keys that today I lost them. I found them, but you know, that on top of that, and I start thinking like, am I all right? I didn't know the Brugger's Bagels process.
I know. You literally turn into a third grader getting yelled at by everyone in the world. Like when you're that size, everyone's bigger. Everyone's just telling you how dumb you are. And it's still at this age, you have those days when you leave the house, you're back to that kid getting yelled at by everybody.
Thank you for opening up a Pandora's box of hellish memories that up until you said that I had successfully suppressed. Now I'm remembering the anxiety. I'm remembering like you get done with a playground and there's a water fountain and you're thirsty. But I remember that the teacher would pull the nozzle. She wouldn't even be allowed to touch it. And then she would count 1, 2, 3, scat. And you would have to, it ended with a scat. And you couldn't, no matter how thirsty you were, you couldn't keep drinking. You're like some kind of POW.
your little tongue just trying to get one more drop on the way out. Oh, it's so hard being a person. All right. So you had the Brugger's Bagels. Did you, when you went back and corrected it, what did they do? Did you get cream cheese on it? Did you go butter?
No, I went lunch bagel. I went brisket, not good for you bagel. It was not good. It was so good. It tasted so good. But it was, you know, definitely not what I should be eating.
It's a good, that's a good one though.
It was really good.
And is that all you've eaten today?
Let me think. Let's see. Yeah, that's all I've eaten today. I skipped breakfast.
You start off with coffee?
I do. Does that count as eating?
No, but it is one of my joys.
Same.
Yeah, I love coffee so much.
You do the chameleon cold brew?
No.
Don't. It's scary. Like something's like, it's the most powerful coffee. And you know, what did my wife say the other day? She said, she was like, you know, I don't know if I want to go to movies in the evening. I'm just, you know, there's been a lot of shootings. And I'm like, Aaron, have you been drinking chameleon cold brew today? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, see, this is what happens. It's that powerful.
It makes you anxious.
It makes you anxious. Like,
yeah.
Extra anxious. So you're suddenly like, it will turn you into a prepper. It's that level of powerful coffee.
It is amazing what that does. I mean, I haven't had the chameleon, but I know just like when I'm like, I just want that sensation of that, the aroma, the coffee, the late afternoon, just give it to me. And
late afternoon? I'm sorry to cut you up. Late afternoon?
Uh-huh.
You do late afternoon coffees?
That's the one too many. That's the one too many, yeah. Why? Are you saying that you can't do that?
I can't. I will not. If I do a late afternoon coffee, I'm not sleeping that night.
It's rolling the dice. It's definitely rolling the dice. I have to then think about, can I get a heavy meal in? Will I work out? These are all prices you have to pay for the joy of an espresso at 4 o'clock.
Right.
But the other, I just love it. So this is what an addiction is. You know it's bad for you. You know you're not going to sleep.
Yeah.
And the chances of being a little too anxious and you're just walking around with no identifiable cause, just that feeling like something's not, am I supposed to, it's yeah. just because you had another shot of coffee.
Yeah. Well, I think once you realize that, you're fine. It's when you forget. That's where you get into trouble.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Whenever you're doing anything mind altering, if as long as you know that that's what's going on, you're okay.
You're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just ate too much weed or did too much acid or drank too much coffee or whatever the right. particular thing is. That's all. Yeah. You just took too much acid. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm supposed to feel weird right now.
Yeah. You took acid and it's like you thought you were going to come down in 6 hours, but no.
No.
You're not.
You're not. And you smoked a little at the last hour, and now you rebooted and gave yourself another 3.
Congratulations. Yeah, I think as long as you remember that, you're all right. The people who freak out, a lot of times they just forgot that they were high.
Yeah, I remember in college, we had like a big park day, and there was mushrooms floating around, and this one kid was just having a whale of a time. He was just not in a good place. And it really is that thing where he was trying to figure out why the world had collapsed around him. Mm. And it's like, no, it hasn't. You just ate these weird little mushrooms on park day.
Yeah.
But once you lose that, you can't, like, it's hard to get them back onto the path.
Well, especially if you take too much, because you get the same effect that happens to people with like concussions, which is they have this looping amnesia. So they get stuck in. I have a friend who, worked at a festival as a doctor. And I was asking him, what's the worst thing you ever saw? And he said it was someone who accidentally took 30 hits of acid or something. And
whoa.
Yeah, accidentally took it. I think he was dripping it onto his tongue or something from a bottle and it broke and spilled on his mouth or something. Or
oh my God.
Like that. And he said that the guy was just like in a loop. He was freaking out. He would ask the exact same questions.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. And they would tell him, you know, you're high, you took too much LSD, or I don't know if they said too much. I don't think you're supposed to say that when people are freaking out. But
right.
Anyway, he like ran out and ended up, I think, finding a rock and trying to bash his teeth out with it.
Whoa.
Yeah. Bad day. Bad day.
So bad day. Yeah, which could end up a bad lifetime. That stuff is just so deadly. That could rattle the toolbox forever.
I don't know if it truly does that. I think they've done a lot of research into it, and that might not be true. But definitely, it's going to be a rough year, I'd say. I don't know about forever, but you're gonna you can get PTSD. I've legitimate PTSD from psychedelics. So that's the place where you can get really a little screwy if you're not careful.
Yeah, yeah, I know, and it just like it keeps coming back, and not to say the chameleon coffee is as potent as that, but
close.
It is the same. It's close. if you don't want to go to the movies anymore, that's a lifelong affliction.
Yeah.
so that was good. So how has your life been? Your little boy is amazing.
Thanks.
You sent me that a little shot of him getting the sink bath.
Yeah.
It brought back so many memories. I love that. And so you'll see, like, as you go through, there's just so much on a daily basis in raising them that you end up with like just vague memories of stuff until you see things like that. And you send me that beautiful shot of him getting a bath in the sink.
Yeah.
And it just brought back all the flood of having the girls when they were that little that they could fit in a sink and have a whole party. Oh my God, you were in a good spot.
Yeah. Yes, I'm in a good spot. I'm really loving being a dad, and I'm loving being in up in the mountains with the kids. And
yeah,
and you know what's cool up here is that the mask mandate has been lifted, so no one's wearing masks anymore. The rates are hardly anyone has it out here right now, and so it's really cool and really it's amazing to go into a place and no one's wearing masks and I'm vaccinated, so it's, you know, it's just it's cool.
Freedom.
And we just took our two-year-old to a gymnastics class. And this is like the first, one of the first things like that he's done in a, like 16 months.
Whoa.
You know, and so that's a kind of bittersweet thing because you're like, damn, you lost a year of this sort of thing. But look, you get to do it now. And we get to, and we're realizing like, oh, wow, we just signed him up for soccer. You know, we're realizing, oh my God, we could do be around people again.
Yeah, you forget that that all those little elements, like you thought about like career stuff or like the big things of seeing your family, whatever. But it's all that little minutia that was causing everybody to kind of unravel.
Yeah,
like really, like all those little extras of just running into people on the street and all that little tiny stuff that was just part of the cacophony of life.
Yeah.
That was really, well, we're supposed to be, it feels pretty open here now. And June 15th is supposed to be, then you can, you're back to walking into the grocery stores without masks and stuff.
Great. You're going to love it. It's I mean, not to be super cheesy, but isn't that, there's something wonderful about realizing how much you were taking everything for granted and realizing like you just, everything you could, at least, you know, grocery stores. Who wants to go to a grocery store anyway? You know, but being in one now without this stupid thing on your face and
so great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Oh my God.
Well, that this is something that was on my mind because I was talking about it with my producer Joe, and we were talking about how there's a segment of people that are coming out and they're more grateful. They saw what we lost, and they're cherishing these little moments. Like you said, even going to the store is like a almost like a religious experience. Yeah. It's just like this is, you just have an appreciation for the world and how it's slipped away. And then there's all these other people, and we keep seeing daily clips of people in stadiums watching basketball and baseball, punching each other in the face, running across the court in the middle of the game. There's people in airports, they don't want to serve alcohol because the people are just, there is another segment of the population who I think lost it a little bit, don't you?
Oh yeah. Well, it's a, I think what we're seeing is an emergent philosophical movement that is at its heart a bizarre new form of nihilism. And it's a group of people that have deconstructed everything to be not true. They don't believe anything. So they don't believe the vaccine is real. They don't believe the pandemic was real. They don't believe the election was real. Many of them don't believe the earth is round. Like it, that anything that's generally embraced by the collective, they reject as being some form of lie told to us by the elite. And so what it's a really interesting, it's a philosophy, it's nihilism is a fascinating philosophy. But I've just never seen it like at this level. And I don't know that these people necessarily refer to themselves as nihilists necessarily, but it seems like that at its base, they've managed to deconstruct everything into a kind of meaninglessness that has left them confused and aggressive.
Yeah, 100%. And as you're saying that, there's also another side of it that, like, if you go to kind of, I even hesitate to say right and left, but on the left side of that is this deconstruction of all institutions. Like, everything was a lie.
Yeah.
I wouldn't classify it as nihilism as much as just tearing down the past, which in some of it is justified to question things. But once you destroy every institution and all religion and all practice and schools are bad, and they're left also in the same place of having nothing to grab onto.
Right.
So now you're talking about these two, and saying two is probably a little too monolithic, but it's you have a lot of people in the population who have nothing to believe in.
Yeah.
That's such a scary place to be.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think there's something legitimate about analyzing all forms of of everything, whether it's your own DNA, all the way down to your own DNA, and sort of thinking about whether or not there's permanence there, you know, or whether or not it's like a lasting thing, or if, you know, it goes all the way to the identity. Like, what are you? Like, don't stop with the institutions. You got to keep going. Like, where do you exist in your body? And what is the thing you identify as yourself? Is that even a thing at all? And in that sort of process, the idea is there's liberation, because you realize you're not weighted down anymore by whatever the thing was. But also, you were supposed to honor the fact that it does exist, though. It's here, but it's not here. It's the term Leela.
Yeah.
It's like the game, like the game God plays. It's called the eternal game. Is called the Leela, and it's a game, and a beautiful game. But that doesn't mean once you realize it's a game, you're supposed to stop playing it necessarily.
Right.
Because even that is another game too, by the way. The game is is a whole other interesting game. But anyway, I'm babbling. The point is, I think it's worth deconstructing all the institutions, deconstruct the police and find where it's bad. But then recognize whenever you see a thing that's fucked up, it implies there's a non-fucked up version of that thing.
Right.
There's a balanced version of it.
Right.
It doesn't mean that because the thing's imbalanced, annihilate it completely. It means where is the imbalance, and then correct that, and now you'll have an improved thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's a puzzling thing, because when you talk about all of it, like my problem always is, okay, I understand questioning everything. I understand railing against wrongs.
Yes.
I get all of that. But you can't separate yourself from it. You are a part of it. So, like, if you're railing against the country and saying that all this is wrong, well, yeah, but you're still a part of it, aren't you? You're still a citizen here. So you don't have the luxury to say it's all wrong without saying I'm all wrong.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
You've got to kind of But see, this is here. Okay, so we're talking about all these people that are like spinning and running across the basketball courts, and we both seem to be enjoying a little gymnastics class and going and picking up a bagel in the shop. It's those little things. Like, it doesn't always have to be like this big gigantic thing that you have to tackle, because you with your little pea brain aren't going to be able to do it. You only have so much energy in your life. You think about bigger, broader things, but you also live down here.
Yeah.
Is that something that you consciously practice?
Yes, because I used to do when I first ran into these Ram Dass people, and the first podcast I did with this guy Raghu Marcus, who runs Ram Dass's foundation, I was saying to him, when do we take to the streets? When do we start throwing Molotov cocktails and burn it? We have to burn this fucking thing down. How many people are going to die because the United States has been at war for 93% of its history, and that's one of the major ways that it makes money. There's nothing left to do but, you know, to destroy
tear it all down.
And he was like, whoa. But he was like, see what you're doing there? Like, you're just flipping it. Now you're the aggressor. Now, you know, now there's a them, and then there's an us.
Uh-huh.
And that's what you've done, is you've created an us and them situation. And in that creation of that, you're going to have war and fighting and all the horrors of the world. And so so there has to be, so the idea is, instead of, if you start letting your ego go messianic or whatever, and like,
yeah,
Maudibing yourself into imagining that you're going to be part of some bloody, violent overthrow of this thing or that thing,
yeah,
then you are only going to fail. It's not going to work, and you're going to be miserable. But the idea is like, so bring it back down to where you're at. And that's what Jack Kornfield says. I quote him a lot. He says, tend to the part of the garden you can touch. And so the idea is like, where is the war in your life? Like, where are you in some rotten war? Even if it's a cold war, where are you not being honest? Where are you not connecting with your community? Where is the war in you? Mm-hmm. And so that's where you start. The idea is like, we work on ourselves so we can help the people closest to us. And that is a formula that I think if everyone adopted it, could lead to the result that the people who are recommending violence as a solution think that they're going to get to via violence, which if that worked, we would be living in a global utopia.
I know, exactly.
It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. You can't get everybody in the world to meditate.
No.
But
I meant... if war worked as a solution.
Oh, if war worked.
Then we would be in a global utopia by now, because the history of humanity for the last many thousands of years has been war. And all that it's resulted in is division and more problems. And, you know, so that's what I'm saying is like the that didn't work.
That
we already tried it.
Process doesn't work.
Time to try something new.
Right.
And I agree with you, though. You're not going to get everyone to meditate. That's for sure. You can barely.
Yeah, no, that's what I thought you were. That's where I thought when I heard utopia. That's what I was thinking. If you did have everybody tend to the part of the garden that they could touch, that's reflection. That is meditation. That is smallness. If everybody was just doing that, you'd be in a good spot. But it's all outward. It's very little in of what my problem is. Like when you saw these people like running around the Capitol and like any kind of like outrage, you know, in Portland, whatever it was, it's always out. It's always them. It's always, when I see like those angry 65-year-old guys with a dirty t-shirt and they just want to fight somebody, I know where that's coming from. It's coming from their own fear, their own mortality.
Yeah,
they're feeling this foundation that they had all this years starting to shake, and what are you going to do with that? You know, a lot of times you just look for someone to punch in the nose.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, some people just love doing that. Some people love to fight.
They love it.
They go out on the weekend and they're hoping to get in a fight. Like that's like how they blow off steam.
I know.
It's so fucked up.
I know. I had a moment yesterday at the airport. I was picking my daughter up at the airport, and you know, I know everyone's on edge and whatever, but anyway, it's one of those you just got to pull up. When you got to time it right for when you pull up, when they're coming out, because they don't let you hang there, and you pick your friend up and you go. So I pull over, and she's there. She's got huge bags. I've got kids. I've got her. I've got the whole thing. And I open the door, and the door is open a little bit. Like, I just left it open so I didn't lock myself out. That dad thing of the worst thing you could do is lose the keys, which you did this morning.
Yes.
And guy in a big giant black SUV just starts laying on the horn, and I'm like, what? I'm like looking at him. I don't even know what he's doing. Like, we're all parking here. What are you trying to get? And I load her up. He honks again. I'm putting their giant bags in. I come around the thing, and now he, like, you know, when they like pull in front of you real quick,
yeah,
he pulls up and he opens up the trunk and he's getting the guy in front of him. I'm like, what do you want me to do? And he's like, he said, you can't just pull over there and then leave your door open. And I just, and this was the ego coming out in me. I just, and it felt great.
Yeah.
I literally just yelled at him, what do you want me to do? I'm picking up my family. The car is here.
Yeah.
Come up with a solution. What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I said, have a wonderful day. I got in the car. But I'm telling you, I did understand the cathartic.
Sure.
Like, this is clear black and white. This guy is wrong. And I'm just letting it out, which I never do in my life. But it did feel like okay. And not to use that as an excuse for people who are doing it for the wrong reasons when they're on a flight and the flight attendant tells you to put your mask on and they pop them in the nose. But there is that thing of like,
also, I do think like something ends up like an unrealistic depiction of how you need to live in the world can appear in the spiritual people where it's like, sometimes you're gonna, like, there are times where you might have to be aggressive to survive, or, you know, there's just times where you gotta do that. That doesn't mean that something's gone wrong with you as a person or your practice is fucked up. It's just, that's the way it works in the world, is sometimes you have to push back, you know? I you just have to push back. And so congratulations on doing that. I mean, the place where it gets bad is like, and scary is some people, then they're like, what do I want you to do? I want you to bleed. And, you know, they're like, you know, then they have a gun. And then, you know what I mean? And then you're laying on the ground and you're like, wait, this is how I die?
or just like going out looking for that all the time. Like every time you get in the car, you're looking to have that conflict. You're searching for that fight. And if you are, guess you're going to find it.
Hey,
you're absolutely going to find it.
Do you know, I have a story. Can I tell you a quick story that I read in a spiritual book? This gets passed around. Stop me if you've heard this fucking story, because I feel like a lot of people have heard it. But did you ever hear this story of the monk who was getting fisted in that BDSM? I'm just kidding. I was thinking of like a story would never get passed around. Okay,
fisting.
No, there's a the story. You know that old classic.
Oh, yeah, that old tale. Yeah, I got that one.
No, the story is there was a. I wish I could remember what book this is from. There was someone who went to Japan, was studying martial arts intensely for a few years and was getting like really good. He's on a subway or he's on a train, and there's this big guy who's drunk and who is, you know, yelling at people. He's like screaming at a pregnant lady. He's like violent and completely out of his mind. And so this guy is getting excited because he's thinking, holy shit, this is the moment. You're not supposed to fight with martial arts, but I might really have to do something because he's violent. And I'm going to have to probably do something. So he starts standing up, getting ready to confront this drunk, when there's like this old man sitting in a seat by himself. And he looks up at the drunk person and very sweetly says to him, what have you been drinking? And the drunk person says, sake. And he's like, oh, sake. I love sake, you know. When the sun is setting, I like to drink it with my wife. And the drunk starts crying and says, you know, my wife died 3 days ago. And the old man says, come sit. And so the drunk sits with him. And then this guy is all of a sudden watching as within a few minutes, the drunk guy has his head in this old man's lap and is weeping while man is like patting his head. And he said, that's when I saw what actual martial arts looks like.
Wow.
Like, you know, there was that.
That's amazing.
I know.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good.
So maybe if you'd said the right thing, you could have cradled that man in your lap and patted his head instead of screaming. I'm just kidding.
Instead of screaming at him.
Well, no, sometimes you got to
scream. When I drove away, I was thinking, I was proud of myself that I didn't, even though it was a sarcastic, have a wonderful day. I could have easily just been like, F you.
Yeah.
Attacked him for whatever he looked like or whatever he was doing. Or I could have been vile and harsh.
Yeah.
And I wasn't. I was defending myself, frankly. I'm in dad mode. I've got kids floating around the SUV. I've got someone just returning from school. I'm loading in luggage. I've got a wife in the thing. You know, I'm in full protecto mode. Fuck and I have somebody who I don't understand for some reason is just pushing aggression towards me. You've got to stand up.
Good for you.
You have to. And I wasn't quite the old man, but I wasn't the guy like giving him roundhouse kicks to the face either.
You got
to
stick up for yourself. Did your family like it? Was there a sense of like, wow, Dad, that was intense?
I don't think they even noticed.
What?
They were just like happy to see my daughter. They're like,
When I got in the car, I would be so ready to get like some kind of compliment for defending.
Yeah, I was. I really was. I was craving it. And they were just like, we should get tacos tonight. It's Tuesday.
It sucks.
I know, exactly. You want to get a little a little cred for it. So do you think that, so where do you think it's headed? And do you think that it's that was the biggest problem I had with the past years of the whole Trump era thing, was making us the them, like we were saying earlier.
Yeah.
But turning us against each, I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, I know there's been comedy bits about it, like we needed, but it's almost like without an enemy, we become the enemy.
Yeah.
And like, we always had Russia for a long time with Sylvester Stallone and Reagan, and you had those bad guys over there, and it gave everybody something to think about of like who we were going after, the Nazis or whatever. Yeah. And China doesn't really satisfy it for people. That doesn't seem to have the same narrative that gets everyone excited. And it's like, we're going to have aliens. Like, what is, we really are at this moment without this cause of like something from the outside's coming to get us. So we're looking at each other and we're looking at people from New York, and New York's looking at people from Texas. And it's like, this is the most unsettling part for me in recent times. We weren't always, there was always differences, but we were never the enemy. And that has been stoked, I feel, especially over the last 4 years.
Yep.
That's the most upsetting part to me.
Well, you know, I pulled out one of my favorite books, which I haven't finished because it's so dense, but I love it so much. It's called The Singularity Is Near by Ray Kurzweil.
Oh.
And it is incredible. It was written years ago.
Yeah.
And in it, he sort of lays, you know about Kurzweil, you know about him?
Yeah, I used to read a lot of him. I've never read the book, though.
Oh, it's good.
He's the anti-aging guy. Like, he's always trying to figure out ways to live forever.
Yeah. And he, so what's cool about it now is that vaccine that we all took, or most of us took, is something he predicted in this book. He said, we're going to start having this kind of like medical technology, mRNA medicine. And that is going to be one of the signifiers that we are almost at this event he calls the singularity. And so COVID accelerated something that is going to drastically transform humanity. It's already done it in the sense that we just got this insane disease and it's vanishing in a lot of places because of this. Yeah. And that is crazy, because the reason it's vanishing is because someone figured out a way to get your to talk to your DNA, tell it to make the specific protein spike so that your immune system would identify that as being out of place and bad without you having a disease. It wasn't a lot like dead virus, live virus. It's literally reprogramming you by communicating with your DNA. And so now you'll notice in the news, they're saying now they're looking at using this for cancer. Now they're using it, you know, looking at using this for a lot of things, which they will do.
Right.
And then that's going to be the bridge, I think, to get us into Kurzweil land, where suddenly, you know, the human lifespans start increasing and human health increases with that because of this technology. So I think what we're seeing is a lot of turbulence related to this thing that's happening, which is we're about to, you know,
right?
We're there's no way to stop this shit, man. It's like you're once you learn how to talk to DNA like that and program DNA and just say, hey, you know what? I would love it if you could maybe grow my hair back or help.
It's so funny you said that one, Reddy. I was like, well, I've got the joke locked and loaded. He's going to say something really profound about living forever, and I'm going to bring it back to my balding.
Your hair is coming. All of it's coming back. And it's all going to be met with the most intense resistance from people who are superstitious. Mm-hmm. And worried that this is demonic or satanic, and that's what we're seeing is like all the people who didn't want to get the vaccine and all the people who are terrified of the vaccine, they're just going to keep resisting. And while they resist, people who aren't afraid are going to start getting a little smarter, a little healthier, a little more advanced, merging with technology a little bit more, and then it's going to create, it's essentially going to create, the species is going to split, I think, into it's going to split. Yeah, I think we're going to look at a kind of like one of the most ridiculously accelerated, like, breaking apart of a species ever, because usually with evolution it takes a long time, because you have to wait for mutation, natural selection to happen. But this, in this case, we'll be engineering ourselves. Right. This is what Kurzweil says, by the way. I mean, I'm just parroting him.
So, okay. The most pressing question is, will we live long enough to participate and get some of the benefits?
Oh yeah. If you're alive. I mean, yes. You already
are. We're getting some of the benefits now, but will we be getting, are we going to stick around for a lot longer as a result of it?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I would. I mean, well, what Kurzweil was saying is, you know, I think he was trying to, he's trying to stay alive. I think, yeah, I think if we can make it another 10 or 20 years, I think we have a shot at probably living a much longer life.
Right.
And also, you know, the stuff with the UFOs right now is really interesting in the sense that we have this technology that is at, that is terrestrial now. I don't know where it came from, but we have some kind of earth-based technology that is defying the way we understand how propulsion works. And so, you know, that's really exciting. I don't care. Everyone's like, it's aliens. I don't care if it's aliens. Right. Holy fuck. We've got these things that are going so fast, going under the ocean, traveling through the ocean at this insane speed.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is, it's here. And so I think we can expect to start seeing more and more things like that as we get closer to this event.
It's almost like these things are too big for it to be the lead story. Because I kept walking around, I keep saying to my daughters, like, why isn't this the number one, the only thing we're talking about? That there's some kind of alien whatever floating over the oceans. And it's almost like what you're saying, like the resistance. It's like your brain can't allow this to really be real. You got to just kind of, until it comes and really hits you over the head, it's like, no, it's too much. It's just too much for our little monkey brain.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I think that's why it's good to just stay grounded. I mean, all that stuff is fun to think about. Truth of the matter is, this is what I realized, is like, if aliens reveal themselves or whatever, how long before you're just sick of them? Like, seriously, how long? Like a year before it's like, who gives a fuck?
He's giving another appearance.
Yeah, you don't care. It's like, that's what's cool about humans is we just get used to stuff. So there might be a couple of years where maybe the New Agers are right. We get invited into the galactic, you know, society because we managed to, like, And like all this COVID shit was just some kind of like global plan, stop the wars. Their stupid condition is that most wars have to stop before they reveal themselves to us. We've kind of pulled it off. We got out of Afghanistan. We stopped most of the wars. Here and there, there's like flare ups, but compared to what we've been doing, it's pretty great. They're going to show up. Wow, there's a galactic civilization. We know how to do wormholes. You want to go to another planet? Great, we can get you there. And then, like, within a couple of years, you're still going to be telling someone, have a nice day, maybe on another planet, but it's honking a different fucking thing. You know what I mean? But we'll still go back to the same way, no matter what.
You go through a giant wormhole and they'll be like looking at you, really? You just talked to the cashier?
Exactly. No, you got to go to the Norzlex device and flip it up three times. Then you'll get the splonk.
All right. I know what I'm doing. I can do things.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're going to irritate them. They're going to go, boy, another fucking planet got into the galactic count. Oh, great.
Right. They act like it's theirs. They just got here.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. Well, this is why I love always talking to you. What was the who's the garden guy? What was that?
That's Jack Kornfield. He's a Buddhist teacher. Kornfield. He teaches mindfulness. He's, you know what? There's a place called Inside LA that his wife Trudy Goodman runs. It's a wonderful place where they teach mindfulness, and they're just wonderful people. Like really,
oh nice,
great.
Well,
people.
That's good. So when dinner rolls around tonight, who's making it? Or is anyone making
it? We're going out to eat. We're going to have a date night. So I'm not sure where we're going to go yet. But our kid's grandma's going to be at the house to take care of them. So I'm not really sure where we're going to go. I think my wife wants to get a drink, though, because she texted me that she wants to get a drink. I don't know why I'm half looking at my phone.
It's summer. It's cocktail time.
Yeah. She wants a spritzer. So I think we're going to go find spritzers. That's where we're at.
That's it. That's the part of the garden you can touch.
The spritzers.
Oh, man. You're the best.
You're the best.
Well, great seeing you. I hope my tour brings me somewhere near you. It'd be good to sit and have spritzers together in person.
Just let me know. You know, I'll meet you halfway. I'd love to see you in person. Right. So yeah, let me know if you end up in the South anywhere.
Yeah. All right. You're the best.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much. See you soon.
See you soon.
There you go. The great Duncan Trussell, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I told you he's a joy. Don't you feel better? Just positivity all the time. Breaking bread. Okay, now, all right, the moment we've all been waiting for. This is so great. This is epic. You're going to love this, not only because it's hilarious, but because it's going to be a story that you are going to learn a lot about the crazy world of Los Angeles and peacocks. Please sit back and listen to my quick bite with Lizzie Cooperman.
Lizzie.
Hi.
How are you?
I mean, everything's skyrocketing over here. I've done my laundry.
Nice work.
I tried a new coconut creamer in my coffee this morning. That was great.
How did that go?
It was really good. I'm just like, there's got to be more out there than almond milk.
It's so funny. I literally just got a text from Joe Rogan saying about all the poisons of almond milk.
Really?
Yeah, he's on an anti-almond milk campaign, personally. I don't think he's doing it publicly. He's just trying to take away my
wild
one joy.
Well, so you use it?
Yeah, well, I don't like using regular milk. So
right.
Whatever you got, oat milk, what's this coconut concoction you're working on?
It's really good. I just, the other day at the coffee shop, I thought, is this almond milk doing anything? Or is it just, you know, kind of like opaque water? Oh, this has almond creamer in it. It's lactose-free coconut and almond creamer vanilla flavor.
Uh-huh.
It might add a few calories to your daily count, but
sure.
For me, it was worth it.
I know. I always feel that I feel like almond milk is just making things wet.
Yes.
It's like you can't have a bowl of cereal just on its own. You know,
right.
I use milk, but I probably could use water.
Right.
If I'm using almond milk.
That's so funny.
Well, I miss you. I haven't spoken to you in a while.
I know. It's been a while. What's new with you?
Well, I was actually, everything's cool. Everything's just going along fine. Looking forward to running around with no masks and all that stuff next week, which would be very exciting. But I was really, what made me think of you is I saw this article in the paper about how these peacocks are overrunning Los Angeles. And I know you were in a long-term relationship with a peacock.
Tom, I named a peacock. I had a peacock in my life every single day during the pandemic.
I remember that. I remember seeing it on Instagram.
One day, this was like in April in the beginning, I walked out to my car and plopped on top of it. There was just this giant gray peacock, like... Bigger than, you know how like pizza delivery people have a car topper?
Yeah.
It was bigger. It was like the size of like a well-fed kindergartner. And it wasn't one of the like blue dazzlers. It was a female, which I believe is called a peafowl.
Uh-huh.
Who, like, yeah.
Like ew?
Peafowl. Exactly. I mean, eventually, yes. Because they love to defecate, which is something I learned almost immediately. But this one was, she looked like she'd been through a lot in her life, kind of a haggard one.
Uh-huh.
And she was sitting on top of my car. I have a black car, and I guess they like dark cars because they use them as mirrors, and they peck at the reflection.
Oh, really?
Yes. So
they peck at the reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean they're arrogant or self-loathing?
Oh, that's so interesting. You're like, are they doing cocaine off your car?
Yeah, maybe.
It was wild. She was just staring at herself. And I thought, well, that's unusual. And I just waited until she was gone. And then the next day, and I have this little balcony, and I bought this little bistro set during the pandemic thinking, oh, at least I can go out on my balcony and have a place to just be outside, you know, without being in contact with people. At 9 a.m., I heard a thud.
Oh, no.
And I went outside, and she was on my table. Yes. And she seemed to, for some reason, and that happened every single day. I would wake up and hear the thud. And look outside and
she was courting
you. Everything of mine. Yes. It was weird. I was like, okay, she liked my car, my table. And then for about a week, she was blocking my door.
You mean you'd come home and she'd be sitting in front of your door, not letting you in?
It was more like I was inside and couldn't go out. So I was online constantly, like, how do I get rid of peacocks? And I read this article that said, oh, they hate dogs. So I went on YouTube and I found this video of vicious dogs barking.
Uh-huh. Smart. Very smart.
Thank you. I feel like my neighbors would say the opposite. I was like, do they think this is the music I'm into? Because I would just blast.
Would the peacock flinch at all when it heard the barking?
Yes. So in the beginning, it actually worked. She would start looking around and then eventually take off.
Right.
But she caught on to it. I think she... realized there were no wolves in the area.
She's like, I have YouTube. I know what you're doing.
Exactly. She's like, they tried this in Arcadia. Because I think they all came from Arcadia.
Arcadia, where's that?
I think it's east of Pasadena.
Oh.
So when all this happened, I was you know, I did so much research. I found out they were brought here in like the 1800s from India.
Uh-huh.
This guy named Lucky brought them over.
It's so funny.
As, I guess, a gift or something exciting. I don't know.
Sure.
What Lucky's deal was. But after that stopped working with the dogs, someone said, well, try using a squirt bottle.
Oh, God.
Right. This is where...
Now it's warfare. It's,
exactly. And I was scared to... Because you don't really know how aggressive they're going to be or what the behavior is like. It's not
sure.
So I would just open my screen just a little bit, squirt, and then shut the screen. And sometimes it wouldn't even go far enough to... you know, make contacts with the peacock.
Yeah.
And I truly went online and was looking at super soakers at one point.
How many months in are we at this point?
This was, so I ended up leaving the apartment in October, and I have to say that was a determining factor.
Wow. In October, and then, so we're talking
so
from
it was
March.
Every day.
March, mm-hmm. Every day from March.
From like April to October, yeah.
Wow.
Every single day, and it made a huge mess on my balcony. There were these winding gray sculptures of feces. It was a nightmare, and they scream like someone being tortured, but in like this operatic voice, in vibrato.
Oh, my God. That's just their call. That's just what. That's just how.
I'm actually like reliving it right now.
I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
No, I love it. It was just a unique thing, and I had to talk to my therapist about it. He was saying, "Well, what do you think the peacock represents in your life?" And because it was, it's just, and then at one point I realized this is the only company I have.
Right, and the peacock. I mean, not to take the peacock's side by any means, but
right.
Maybe in the isolation of the pandemic and not seeing people, the peacock was like, that's my people.
Right. No, absolutely. And what's interesting, too, is I went from loving it to hating it. Like, I just vacillated between these two extremes constantly. I would say hello, and then I would... almost break down. Like, I can't even, you know, it was the stress of the pandemic.
Oh, my God.
Was just exacerbated by feeling trapped by this bird. And that it was kind of controlling my life for a while. And
you
know, I was building a credenza at the time. Like, and so I ended up naming her Credenza. And then eventually I ended up leaving the apartment. I escaped to New Mexico during the pandemic.
Really?
Yeah, I just, my lease was up and I couldn't think of anywhere else that
no.
I could think of that made me feel excited. And I love New Mexico. So I was like, I'll just put my stuff into storage and drive and stay in an Airbnb.
Uh-huh.
So I ended up living in this little studio above a reflective jewelry shop for like 3 months.
Oh, wow.
But the day that I was about to leave for this 12-hour drive,
yeah,
I went out to my car and she was standing right at the driver's side.
No.
Right at the door. I could not even believe it. I thought she knows. Like, she sensed.
Yeah. She sees you packing.
Yeah.
She looked in the window.
Yeah.
She saw.
She looked in the window.
She saw your search history for Airbnbs in New Mexico.
That is so funny. I mean, it was just such a crazy. It was a roller coaster with her in a way. And what's weird is I ran into one of my neighbors, you know, down by our parking area. And I said something about the peacocks, thinking we would be, you know, complaining about the peacocks, mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, have you seen the peacock that's just up there on the railing? He was like, oh, yeah, isn't she beautiful? And I thought, oh, okay, so I can't, like, complain to this guy.
Yeah.
Because people have differing opinions on them. And there's actually, I read all these articles about this neighborhood in Florida. I think it's in Miami, where they ended up having to come in and transport all the peacocks to a sanctuary or something, because it was causing so much disruption in the neighborhood and so much conflict. Between the residents.
Oh, the rest of the, they're beautiful, leave them alone and get them off my lawn.
Yeah, because some people want to feed them and they think, oh, it's, what a unique, beautiful experience.
Yeah.
But
I've never trusted them. I've never trusted them. They seem to me like living bagpipes. Like there's like things sticking out haphazardly.
Right.
They're kind of annoying. I didn't like the males, I guess, or the really pretty ones. A little, they kind of, you got the feeling like they thought they were too pretty.
Right. Yes, they definitely. So we had a few stragglers, a few blue stragglers on my street as well. And yeah, they definitely strut, and you get the sense that they would happily just whack you with their fan.
Right. Now,
yeah.
If this was a movie, you would be in New Mexico on top of the jewelry shop in your studio apartment and just hear, whoa!
Tom, I'm not kidding you. Yesterday when you said, oh, I'm going to call you, I could have sworn I heard a peacock sound in my neighborhood. It was like, like they just...
Well, there's a lot of them now. It's becoming a bit of a thing here in Los Angeles.
Okay, just another thing. I call it animal control. I mean, I really was like, it just felt like at certain points a huge disruption.
Sure.
And they were saying, well, what do you want us to do about it? There's nothing we can do. It's a bird, you know. I think they recommended the water bottle and stuff like that. And then someone at animal control said, well, you should call 911. And I did call 911, and they were actually pretty receptive and understanding, but they said, how do you think it's going to look if we come over there with a hose?
pretty great.
Yes, I agree.
Jeez. So now you've settled back in L.A.
Now I'm back in L.A.
Are you constantly looking over your shoulder?
I mean, yesterday when I heard that noise, I was thinking, I haven't seen the last of them. It's exactly like how you said the movie would end. It's exactly that. Because they're moving. I feel like COVID also changed a lot of migration patterns because the streets were so empty for a while. Like, I remember reading stories about, you know, alligators turning up on mini golf courses.
Yeah. Taking up the empty bar stools.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. They love trivia. They love trivia night. I just feel like they're going to keep moving west.
You're right. Wow.
There's nothing unless. Yeah. Then I was reading an article where they were saying, well, we're going to have to learn to coexist with them.
Uh-oh.
And I guess my question is why?
You know what my question is? Did a peacock write that article?
Seriously, who else? Have you seen any?
I haven't. I only saw them. I haven't seen any out in the wild of the San Fernando Valley. But I thought it was just kind of like a funny little story. And then I remember you vaguely your Instagram with you with a peacock. I had no idea this was such a fraught situation.
I think I was patient zero.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel like I felt like I was being tested in so many ways because
Yeah.
It took, I had to shift, you know, my perspective so many times of, no, this is a beautiful thing.
Right.
This a beautiful thing?
Yeah, right. It's that same thing with the whole pandemic experience. It's like, if you were safe, then it came down to, well, am I grateful for this time? Or am I freaking
right.
out because of this time? It really kind of encapsulates that whole struggle.
It's so true. It's so true.
So at the end of it all, which side do you come down on?
I think we need to, in your backyard, create a peacock sanctuary.
Right.
A place, I mean, I feel like I see, you know, open lots all the time in LA. Why not just put up a fence and have mm-hmm. them live happily? Although I think they can fly.
Yeah. I think that that approach might be too kind-hearted.
Right.
I think we're in the beginning of a war.
I think we might be too. And the other thing is, one theory that I had was that maybe, because there were some trees across the fence from me, she had a nest in one of the trees and was watching the nest.
Uh-huh.
And kind of using my Wayfair brand bistro table as a lookout point.
right.
That I ended up having to give away because it was destroyed.
Oh, my God.
By her bodily function.
Disgusting. At the very least, I think we should monetize this situation and write a Alfred Hitchcock-type movie and just call it Bird rather than The Bird.
Oh, my God. I love that. I thought you were going to say we should monetize this and put these birds on Cameo.
I'm sure they have an account.
I love that. Just Bird. That's incredible.
Bird. Well, Lizzie, thank you so much. This was so much deeper than I thought it was going to be. I was just excited to say hello to you, but this is epic.
I can't even believe it happened. And it feels good to express it because I obviously still have some pent up feelings.
Right. Yeah. And if they hear this podcast and you look out your window and you see them, call me. Don't call my one. Call
I'm
me.
I'm going to for sure.
All right.
For sure. Thanks, Tom.
You're the best.
You are.
See you soon.
Okay. Bye.
I told you it was a great story. Do you tell me you're not going to rewind and listen to that a couple of times? Thank you to Lizzie for sharing that story. Thank you to Duncan Trussell for being on board. Thank you to our good friends at Freshly.com for sponsoring today's program. You guys are the best. Make sure that you go to wherever you listen to this podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you don't miss out on all these great episodes and all of these and great conversations and podcasts. And listen, we are going to be expanding a little bit. We are going to be including more recipes. I'm going to put up the scone recipe from this week's episode, give you a little more content that way. And make sure you like and subscribe. Make sure you tell your friends. Make sure you give us lots of stars. Reviews always help to spread the word. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Breaking Bread with Tom Papa. You guys are the best. You're doing great.